Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome back to Nestalgia. I'm your host, Nassim, and I'm so glad you're tuning in. Friends, you are listening to the soundbite series, Britney Spears, Oops, I Did It Again. Yes, we are talking about this fantastic album that was released back in 2000 at the height of the new millennium. Friends, I'm so excited to dive into this episode. I have an amazing special guest, my friend Gabriella, who will be joining us later. But before that, I just wanted to do a little housekeeping moment, if you will. And I've decided, listeners, that in order to just stay consistent with nostalgia and come up with a rhythm that works for the pace of my life, we will be releasing episodes once a month going forward. So I tried once a week. I used to do every other. We've taken breaks. But I just think for the sake of consistency, once a month is what's doable for me. So that's what we're going to do. And so I hope that you'll be excited with me at the start of each month when I drop a new episode. And as always, I would love requests on what you want to hear me tackle and talk about on Nostalgia. Okay, so in this soundbite series episode, we're covering Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again album. I actually wanted to get myself pumped up. So the other day I put it on my way home from work. Like I took out my actual CD because yes, I still have a CD player in my car and I still have my giant black CD case that's in my trunk. So I took it out. I flipped over to the, pop section, got out Britney's album and I listened to it in chronological order, track 1 to 11, and loved it. Like I really, really loved it. And later on in this episode, I go through, a few of my favorite Britney tracks, but I thought I want to just start off the episode by giving like a final stamp of approval of like, what are my top three favorite Britney songs? And I think I've got it down to like an accurate top three. So without further ado, friends, my top three Britney songs, number one is Crazy, Drive Me Crazy. Number two is One Kiss From You, which is on this album. And number three is a very unknown I Will Be There from her debut album. It's track 7 on the first album. Do you guys remember these songs? Do you care about them as much as I do? My honorable mentions are going to be Overprotected and Lucky. So later in the episode, I give another, I talk about the same ones. I think I might add one or two other ones, but I take top three lists pretty seriously. So I think that is my, most accurate top three with the honorable mentions. I'm just a very passionate person. Okay. So I really care about these things, but I want to know, does anybody remember or know the songs I'm talking about? I mentioned this later in the episode. I'm not a diehard Britney Spears fan. I'm sorry to disappoint anyone out there who's listening, but I'm not obsessed. I never was. And I found it hard to relate to her and don't really love her music, honestly, after the first three albums. So this will hopefully be a pretty unbiased look at a wonderful album, which I really do love. So, okay, let's get this going. I'm so excited to welcome back my dear friend, Gabriella. Welcome to Nostalgia.
I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks for coming back on, friend. It's so good to have you.
We're doing it again. Oops.
I feel like we've spent countless Marco Polos talking about her. Do you have like a fond childhood memory of like growing up with Britney?
I gotta say, I remember like this vague thing of her music video, right? The Lockers, Baby One More Time.
Yep.
But to me, I would see Britney every day. She was on a poster, Got Milk poster in my cafeteria. And as I was waiting in line, I would just stare at her. I mean, she's an icon, right? Our generation, she was huge. So I feel like that's really, I always think back at that Got Milk.
Right. And Pepsi, of course. Pepsi and Britney are synonymous.
Yes. It's crazy how these ads stick with us.
I know. The marketing worked, I guess. I'm curious for you. I'm going to be honest and I might disappoint some fans, but I'm actually not like obsessed with Britney Spears by any means.
Neither am I.
Okay. Sorry to burst everyone's bubble.
It's good though. I think we'll be more objective.
I think so too. And I think that that's why it's still so cool that this was even an album I chose, because it is a really great album. So I just thought we could start right, like high level. I want to just run some like a little rap sheet from this album.
Educate me.
Okay. So Oops, I Did It Again. This album came out in March of 2000. So the prime era, the prime year.
New decade. Y2K.
Millennium. And in its first week, it was the record for the highest debut week album sales by a female artist.
That's wild.
The record was not broken until 15 years later. Guess by who?
It's either Taylor Swift or Adele.
Adele. There you go. Adele's 25. Yeah. What?
Boom. That's crazy though. That was a long time.
Oh my gosh. And then get this. So both her debut album, Baby One More Time, and Oops, I Did It Again, they both received diamond certification. This was when she was 18 years old, the youngest person to have multiple albums with diamond certification.
That is wild.
It's amazing. Wow. So yeah, let's break down this like track list. I listen to this, honestly, I feel like I love like 8 or 9 out of the 12. Like I really, really like this album, but I'm curious, and of course I know everybody knows Oops, I Did It Again, but what are some of your favorites? Do you have a top three, top one?
Top two. I love the Don't Let Me Be the Last to Know. That is one I really love.
Fun fact about that. So Shania Twain co-wrote that with her.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's a great song. Of course Shania would be on it.
And this blew my mind. It's actually, I just read this yesterday. Britney Spears has gone on record to say that's her favorite song of her whole repertoire.
Oh my gosh. I feel it. I feel the lyrics. I feel it. I love that song. And I feel like, I don't know. It's not only just like the crush vibe, like when you're younger and you just like that excitement and the tension, but it also applies to when you're an adult. Like
totally.
Yeah. If you feel something, like, tell me, like I think it's a universal feeling.
Yes.
All right. Lucky's my second favorite. And I think that this there's a huge storytelling component in this album. Lucky to me is like a pop country song. I mean, it's telling a story and it's a little eerie now to listen to it. It almost feels like a foreshadowing. When she's like, the tears come out at night and like just talking about her loneliness.
Yeah.
I really like Lucky. That's my second favorite.
I love Lucky too so much.
Yeah. This whole album is gold. It doesn't surprise me that I went diamond.
No, not at all. Can we talk a little bit about the fashion and just music videos, please?
Sure.
I'm just thinking back to Oops, I Did It Again. Like the iconic red, like what was that jumpsuit?
I don't know what that was. And the makeup is very like frosty, I guess would be
totally,
the word.
Totally.
I don't know.
Sticks great hair. Why was there Titanic references in the video? What was that? The astronaut?
I don't know, but whatever happened, it worked because it broke records. I mean, Titanic was huge. I remember having that little, like, you know, those little newspapers we'd get in class and like Leo on the cover. And
do I know it? Yes.
And take it home and like tape it to your wall, you know?
I had money. Yep. I know. It's just funny because Titanic came out like 4 years prior. So I'm like, I wonder, I mean, and I know that it was famous. It still is to this day. It's timeless.
Yeah.
But I wonder what caused her to like literally talk, like the heart of the ocean has a reference in it, like, you know, like him going, he's an astronaut, but he went down to the ocean to get it for her. And then the video seems like you're on another planet. It just made no sense.
It was just like the epitome of romance to us in that era, you know, Titanic. You want someone to dive into the ocean, you want someone to drown and give you the door, you know? Totally. It's like,
Stronger. I feel like everyone hopefully remembers. If you don't, go back and watch the video for Stronger. That chair choreography, Gabriella, like that is just so late 90s, early 2000s.
I feel like that's the kind of thing we would like attempt like in a birthday party or something. And fail.
It's so real. It takes you back to Backstreet Boys, As Long As You Love Me. They also had a synchronized chair routine. Like it was just something like you needed a prop.
It was a thing. I love that song, by the way.
I do too. I actually think that's probably my like next favorite. If I have like a top five, it's great. If you guys all remember, listeners, this CD, as well as many CDs like in the late 90s, had like little, like, I think on some albums they're called skits or like interlude tracks. I was trying to Google it and I couldn't even find the name of it, but I think it's called a skit or an interlude, where Britney had quite a few in this album that I still remember to this day. But like, you know, ones where like, I don't get why, like the voicemail one, like, hey, what's up? This is great. I'm not in right now, so do your thing. Beep, beep. Just kidding.
I'm a little picky, but I know what I want. There are some that really stand out, and then there were some that, as I was listening back on the album, I was like, oh man, like it just came back. And I have to say, I like it. It goes to that storytelling component. Oh, it's so creative.
Okay. So listen. So then he goes, no matter what I do for you, it never seems to be enough. Ew, I can't believe he said that. You don't think I'm like that, do you?
Well, you are.
What?
I also wanted to talk about Dear Diary, the last song, which also feels like a skit, but a song. I just really wonder why, as an 18-year-old, she did that. Like, it's just, guys, if you don't know, it's literally like she's sing-song saying poet, almost like poetry in a way.
Yeah.
Dear Diary, today I saw a boy. I wonder if he noticed me. But it's playing like light piano in the background. The last song on the album. I just think it's cheesy. I never liked it, then I don't like it now. What do you think?
I also think it's cheesy. But it kind of follows the same, again, like storytelling theme of the others. Yeah. But it is cheesy. And it is a departure from the other songs. Because as you said, I really do agree with the fact that this was kind of like a, I'm mature now. And that one kind of takes her back.
It does.
The last song. So it's like, I'm just kidding, guys. Do you journal? Do you keep a diary?
I do. I love, no, I, so I'm not knocking.
I do
that.
Too. I do too.
We both love writing. Like, I think just the notion of like, if I were to take my journal now and like kind of sing song it, like it just
no,
felt like
that
she's
wouldn't
half
work for me.
Singing, half saying, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And it's the themes too. It does seem childish. I agree.
It does.
I do like Can't Get No Satisfaction. It's a bop. Really? I like the first half of the album a lot more than the last half. It's weird because the vibe evolves. I feel like the first half is also more poppy. While, as you mentioned, like there's other songs that have more of a beat and a different flavor.
Totally.
I am a big pop fan. I don't know what it is. I hear just the pop vibe and it makes me really happy. So I like that.
I do too. Totally. And it's so sad, but that's I Can't Get No Satisfaction. The cover, like that was my first, I didn't know the Rolling Stones growing up. So that was my first listen of that song. I did not know it was a cover.
Know it was a cover. Newsflash to me.
Yeah, that's like their people are gonna die at us. That's like the Rolling Stones' most popular song.
Sorry,
yeah. You didn't know. So I was saying I didn't know then. Listeners, Gabriella did not know now.
I'm getting a full education.
Yeah, it's like their most popular song. So she covered it, which is cool.
Well, for me, it's always been a Britney song.
I love it. No, and it's funny. I always think of those people. You know how like those graphic tees are so popular, like Nirvana, Rolling Stones. I always like
they've never listened.
No,
to that.
I always make what name three songs. Name three. I also want to give a little bit of credit to What You See Is What You Get. I really, really like the lyrics of this song. I don't think she wrote it necessarily, but I love that she chose to add this to her album. But the chorus is, what you see is what you get. This is me. If you want me, don't forget that you should take me as I am, because I can promise you that what you see is what you get. And she goes on to say, like, I can't have no chains around me. Like, kind of like this whole, like, I'm going to be free. I'm going to party with my friends. Like, don't be staring at me while I'm with my girls. It's just, it's powerful.
Don't talk about me wearing too much makeup.
Yeah. Like, heck yeah, girl power.
It's very much a freedom song, for sure. Totally. I do like this song a lot. I have to say, she embodied it.
Absolutely.
She was free, whatever that meant to her and whatever that turned into. But she was free. Yeah, she was.
Everyone probably has seen this new documentary that came out, right? We've talked about it so much with this whole, like, you know, conspiracy, conservatorship. Is it true? Is it not? I really want to just like dive into that really quick. You, as an attorney, as a lawyer, like, what do you, What do you make of this? Just what is your perspective? Do you think she's okay? Let's just start there. Do you think Britney's okay?
No, I don't think she's okay. I think that I heard someone once say that there's just a level of trauma that comes with fame. I don't think many of the childhood stars that we looked up to came out unscathed, to be honest. It's like more the exception. And yet, I also think that, you know, you can have that trauma from fame, but you can also just have mental illness, right? Separately. And then we kind of don't know where one stops and one begins. So I think that that's a challenging thing, but I really do think that there are some issues there. Just looking at her Instagram, like as an attorney, you know, I've worked with elderly people and I have been involved when guardians, at least in New York, we call them guardians. Mm. In California, a guardian is for a minor. But basically the New York guardianship is the equivalent of the conservatorship that she's under. Okay. And so when people are going under, I'll just use the word conservatorship since mm-hmm. that's what she's under, mm-hmm. you know, you go through extensive evaluations. It doesn't just happen. There's usually a psych eval. Also, even more important is just the fact that many times we as attorneys have to take that first step before anyone starts evaluating them. We have to kind of see if someone needs to evaluate them. Right. And many times what we're looking at is not just behavior, but also how people present themselves, right? And so I think her Instagram gives us, even though there's not much insight and, you know, we don't know this whole, like if someone's controlling behind the scenes, but the thing is that just taking all that away and just looking at her, looking at her hair, you know, look, and this is not to shame someone. It's just a reality. It's facts, right? Look at her makeup, look at how she's dressed. I think that all of these things tell us that there's something a little off here. Yeah.
Which is so heartbreaking. Like, and it goes back to your point of like Lucky being such a foreshadowing song. It really is eerie to think about.
Right. And I think it's Shallon Lester who said that. I want to give credit to that, where she talks about how fame is a type of trauma. And I always found that to be really intriguing. Yeah.
My question is, I guess, why doesn't this happen to everyone? You know, like, why didn't this happen like to the Backstreet Boys or NSYNC or Justin, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's hard, right? Because we only see so much. There are several Backstreet Boys who dealt with drug and substance abuse issues, right? And so I think it can manifest itself in so many different ways. I don't know. You know, it could be like something genetic that she's predisposed to mental health issues or something like that. It could be simply the fact that I think that, you know, looking at the documentary, I think the documentary was very, like, it had a clear agenda. So I didn't appreciate that. But I do think that something that you do glean is the fact that she, like, her parents weren't always with her, right? There's this lady who was with her. And I think that in many of the decisions that she made early on, I mean, she was a teenager, her decisions seemed to lack a lot of guidance. So sometimes I think it's, and again, this isn't blaming parents, but it's just sometimes people, you know, people do the best that they can. Yeah. Sometimes it's not good enough, whatever that may be. And sometimes we think that things are going well when really there's a support system that's lacking, or, you know, there's stuff that people can't see. If you're not there, there can be so much that's hidden, so much that's emotional. And so I don't know, you know, I don't know if those things played a role into how this spiraled. Yeah.
Gosh, I think of even the album that came after this, the I forgot the name, but you know, I'm a Slave for You was on there. And I remember specifically seeing that music video for the first time. And I remember my parents were in the room. And for those who don't remember, it's a very raunchy video.
It's very raunchy.
She's like, has like sweat all over herself. She's like half naked. And I remember that moment, even like my parents' reaction of like, this is not like, what? Like Britney, like what happened to her? Kind of like this, like really quick, like just like, it was kind of like when Christina Aguilera came out with that song Dirty, you know, in the video.
It was a turning point.
It was a turning point for sure. Yeah. So I think I even remember moments like that, that were, at least for my childhood, I'm sure for you, you're like, whoa, like major turning point. They're like, you're trying to shed that image of being a kid or teenager, you know?
And it's so interesting because she was sexualized from so young. And I actually think that played a role as to why I maybe wasn't so like in the Britney camp. Like I was more like Mandy Moore. Like, and I think that was part of it. I mean, she really was sexualized from the beginning. Yeah. You know, I don't think my parents wanted me looking up to that image.
Right.
And that's not to shame anyone. It's just the reality. It's not how I was raised. And it's not how a lot of people were raised. And so maybe that also played a part in it. I mean, she really did present an image that I don't know if someone so young had presented that kind of an image before.
This might be kind of like taboo, I guess, or whatever, controversial, but I'm curious.
Yeah.
So you know how like when she came out with like all, you know, all these songs, the common like narrative was like, you know, I'm a woman, I'm going to flaunt what, you know, my, this is just who I am. And the, you know, like, don't sexualize me. It's just like, I'm rocking my body and da da da. Like, what do you think of that argument, I guess?
People are entitled to do what they want to do. But I do think that we run into trouble when we think that things don't have consequences. Like there's always an effect to something. Like you can't do something and then, you know, you can't throw a ball up in the air and then expect it not to fall. And I think that that's part of the issue here. I think that she was very much someone who wanted to feel empowered, you know, be sexy, be girly, be all these things. And then it's interesting because, you know, we see, at least in the documentary, and we can see in clips from like late night shows, all kinds of interviews, that this sexual content always came up when she was being interviewed. And then people are like, oh, she's so young and what are they doing? But it's like, also, she was presenting herself in a certain way, which I think opened the door a bit to that. Yeah. There's a lot that we feel today is very inexcusable, but I also think that we are judging something from the past with today's ethics. Yeah, that probably wouldn't happen today in an interview.
Yeah.
I think it was tough because there's just, and I think part of even just not just her image, but a lot of the choices that she made early on before the conservatorship ended up affecting the fact that she fell under the conservatorship. And I think that this documentary glossed over that, her marriage to Kevin Federline, her relationships, right? Like there's just a lot there that certain choices were made. And so if those choices were made, we can't just try to absolve people from the consequences of those choices. And that's, I think, the issue that I have. You know, people can do as they wish, right? Like I live my life how I want to live it. Someone else can live their life how they want to live it. But let's not pretend like certain things are detached from a whole path that kind of comes with it, if that makes sense.
So much sense. I love your perspective. I remember when we talked about it too, you were my first friend that wasn't immediately going to jump at like, you know, after watching the movie, like, oh my gosh, she's under control. Like we have to free her. Da, da, da. Like I love just pausing and hearing your perspective of like, again, we're not trying to shame anyone, but you're absolutely right that there is a path that your decisions take you down in life and we're all responsible for them. I remember something you mentioned too, and we talked before, was about like just the season of her doing that Rush Chapel wedding with like the childhood friend and like, like all those things that were like, those are kind of red flags. So like, yeah, rightfully
major
so
red flags
was concerned.
There was a lot of stuff. Again, even just her wedding, like just look at the way she's dressed for her wedding. And again, it's not to shame, but it's just, she looks disheveled. Like she looks, she's wearing like a super short dress, her like bra strap is hanging out. Like there's just like so much, the person she chose, right? Like, I don't think every mother dreams of a Kevin Federline, no offense to him, for their daughter. So it's just like part of why I didn't rush to be like, oh, she's being controlled. I know how hard it is when you do these conservatorship type cases. The courts are very, very careful because it's something that's so big, making someone be in charge of someone's life. They don't just give people free rein. Sometimes they only give you a little bit. And then if you need more, you have to come back and petition it from the court. Like they try to restrict as much as possible because it is a big deal. And I think that people don't realize that, you know, the people who are there, the attorneys, all these people, sure, there's bad apples, but I'm sure they care.
Yeah, I
really do, because I know I care when I do my cases. I don't think it's a joke. And there was actually the only person, I think, from the dad's camp, there was an attorney who had her dad as a client and she was involved in the initial conservatorship proceedings. She said, everyone who is involved in this case really cares for Brittany. And they really tried to villainize her in the documentary. But I really do think that she is probably sincere. Someone always gets paid. And in this case, it's her dad. And hopefully that's not a bad thing. I don't know. We don't know, right? We don't know what's in the psych report. We don't know what her relationship is with her dad. But I can say that it could be a lot worse. It could be a lot more impersonal. It could be a lot more exploitative. And hopefully that's not the case here.
I hope so too. No, I thank you for that perspective. You're right. Cause I'm like, I hope that he's like giving it to the sons or, you know, or to the grandkids, I mean, or like,
or putting it in a trust or something. Like, who knows?
Gosh, it's crazy though. It's sad. I know. I think when I just watched it, I was like, no matter what the truth is, like it's altogether just sad. But, you know, yeah. I think we can, that, and that's why I love the beauty of nostalgia is we don't have to stay in the present. We can go back to the past and flashback 20 years ago when it was like her prime. And she, I think seemed happy. I don't know. She was probably like at the height of her like fame.
I think the last song that I just felt so connected to that she released was Every Time.
Yeah, the video.
The bathtub. Like, it's that song, I think, is probably my favorite Britney song, all-time favorite. And it is very emotional and very dark. Yeah. But that was, I think, probably the last time I really was focused on Britney's music. Yeah.
I remember the last song of hers that I also really loved. And again, wow, it's like so cool that all the songs kind of have the same theme, was Overprotected on her Britney album. Mm-hmm. And just the lyrics are like, say hello to the girl that I am. Like, you're going to have to see things through my perspective. I need to make mistakes to learn who I am. I'm tired of being so protected, overprotected. And yeah, like from like age, like what, when maybe she was 19, 20, like poor girl.
Yeah, there's definitely a theme here. And this was even before we saw kind of everything unravel. So totally. I don't think I realized how much weird foreshadowing there was in her music up until now.
I think I'm still like taken aback by it. This whole conversation.
Like I saw Lucky, like, but then I'm like, yeah, like all these songs.
Yeah. Overprotected Every Time. Like, yeah. I even think of, there's another song on her Britney album called Cinderella. Very like, I don't think it ever came out as a single. I really, really love it too. It just has this like dancey vibe. Don't worry, you're going to be all right. I'm running away. I've made up my mind. You have to let me go. I've made my wish. Cinderella's got to go. I'm just trying to live my life. Don't worry, you're going to be all right. Cinderella's got to go.
You know what that reminds me of? She recently came out in the news and said that these documentaries were very hypocritical because they call out the media, but they're doing the same thing. And in a way, I do think that she wants people to let her go, like let her live her life in not obscurity, but just let her live.
Totally.
Outside of the public eye completely.
Do you think that she'll ever get that, like for the rest of her life?
Probably not. Yeah. I honestly think that there's a lot of people who are kind of obsessed with this in an unhealthy way.
Yeah.
And I think that they have had plenty of years, time, opportunity to let her live maybe the life that she wants. Again, we don't know. Yeah. But if that's what she wants, it's ironic that the people who are so obsessed with her won't let her do that.
Totally. For both of us who are not really Britney diehard fans, we can objectively say that that was a great album.
That was a great album.
And can I just note, like the album cover, like how perfectly late 90s is like the little hanging doorway? Like, what are those called?
The beaded, like, looks like you're at like a fortune teller's house or something.
I used to love those. I used to be like, I want that for my room. Like, why?
That was like a really like ethnic thing too. I've heard like a lot of ethnicities would always have that, like between the kitchen and the, you know.
I know. Now I'm like, is that like cultural appropriation? I don't know, but she looks cute.
She defined pop music and who we looked up to for a whole generation.
Yep.
We've all danced to her music.
Gosh, yeah.
And we all felt empowered by it in some way or another.
And how cool is it that she's one of those people that even though her first name is like pretty generic, you can say Britney and everyone knows you're talking about Britney Spears.
It's Britney, bitch.
Gabriella, thank you so much for coming on and just for giving us, I was excited because I knew you'd bring this unique insight into even the conservatorship. And I hope listeners that that's maybe even caused you to think about things differently or to have a different perspective or just like shed, I think it just educated me in our conversation.
Hopefully the people involved deeply care. There's a lot of us who do in this profession, and mental health is not a joke. It's so serious. And so really all the people involved want is what's best for that person. And I hope that that's what's happening with her because we wish her the best. She's a person. She's a great person. She's a mom. She's a daughter and she's an icon.
Absolutely. So. And after all of the amazing memories and music and like, you know, all the good she's given us, it's like, we want the best for her too. And I hope she's okay. I hope she lives many long years of happiness.
this is why I love your podcast. You know, it takes us back to just good times, and, you know, not just for us, they were good for Britney too. This is what made her who she was. Like, it's just so fun to go back to these times of just more innocence and youth, and it's always my pleasure.
One really quick editor's note addendum as we conclude. I totally forgot that I love Born to Make You Happy off of the first album as well. So I know we were talking about Oops, I Did It Again, but clearly the first album has my heart, because Born to Make You Happy, I Will Be There, and Drive Me Crazy are all on the first album. So that is my favorite. However, storytelling-wise, hidden gem-wise, this one takes the cake. It is fire. So I want to hear from you guys. Do you agree with me on my favorite songs? Is there one that I missed? I love comparing and contrasting and debriefing the episode. So send me a DM at Nassim K and let's talk.